The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. You're listening to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM with Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers, host of Conversation Unplugged. Our co-host, Bishop Kevin Akins, wasn't able to make it today. You know, he's a pastor, and so he had pastoral responsibilities this afternoon, a funeral at his church. He really wanted to be present for this interview. You know, it's definitely a vital part of our team on Conversation Unplugged. So want to lift Pastor Bishop Kevin Akins in our prayers as he's carrying out his pastoral responsibilities and everything like that. But I'm blessed to have good friend, definitely in the fight for social justice, Pastor Reverend Dr. Chris Jimenez. Hey, Pastor Jimenez, how you doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
Oh, man, like I told you earlier, running and gunning. Yeah, just running and gunning. Hey, tell us a little bit about yourself, because we are getting into a very deep topic today, which is entitled Human Right Crisis in the Philadelphia Correctional Facilities. And this is really going to be deep today. And for those who are looking to call in, 1-888-329-3306. Again, 1-888-329-3306. Pastor Jimenez, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, originally I'm from D.C. I grew up, I always talk about social justice being in my blood. My mother was a civil rights activist, grew up in the Anacostia section of D.C., and that was kind of the heart of the civil rights movement in the 60s when I was young. And then I went to Marine Corps. I spent about 22 years in the Marines and military law enforcement. So I've seen that side of the criminal justice system. As a result of a car accident and an addiction that kind of took off from bad pain management, I ended up incarcerated. And probably about 6 months after I got out, I then saw another side of the criminal justice system as the father of a homicide victim. And so that has kind of informed my work,
right?
You know, as a person in long-term recovery, formerly incarcerated, former law enforcement officer, and father of a homicide victim, has kind of shaped the work that I do. And I serve as executive director of an organization called Healing Communities PA, which is was originally founded by Dr. Dietrich Lear,
right?
As a criminal justice reform organization and reentry support organization, originally teaching faith communities how to, we still do that work too, but teaching faith communities how to effectively support people coming home from prison, and then how to also reteach the faith community how to get involved in advocacy. You know, social justice used to be led by the faith community in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somewhere in the 70s, you know, it's kind of a couple of things that happened. The late 60s, of course, losing, you know, Malcolm and Martin, which put a huge brain drain on the sort of ability of organizing in the faith community. And then the prosperity gospel, you know, which shifted the focus of the faith community away from representing those who were disenfranchised and poor and downtrodden and people of color and, you know, those who had been oppressed, switching away from that to sort of this get rich quick scheme. So, you know, that has become what we kind of know is the, you know, some part of the modern church today.
Right.
You know, so, you know, and it caused us to abdicate our moral authority. So now we're in this movement again, you know, and we're, you know, we've got a lot of work to do, you know, and so, you know, I'm happy that God has sort of taken everything that was my challenge, and, you know, and turned it into my mission.
Wow. So let's take our readers and not readers, let's take our listeners on a journey today. Those who are viewing by Facebook Live on my Facebook page, I know, Chris, you're going to share to your Facebook page, and those who are on WWDB 860 AM Facebook page, as well as listening on 860 AM, dialing in, if you have, definitely would like to have your comment, 1-888-329-3306. All right, human rights crisis in the Philadelphia Correctional Facilities. Let me share with you on this journey how this came about. The Inquirer reported, I believe it was either the beginning of this week or the end of last week, there was a title in their newspaper, 29 people died in Philly jails and the pandemic, city officials say they did a good job. Here's what the article says. As he watched, his blood soaked through the last of his makeshift bandages and puddle on the floor. Mark Subber wondered if he would die in his jail cell in the Karam Fromhoek Correctional Facility in Northeast Philadelphia. That morning in September, a correctional officer had unlocked all the doors on a unit. Then, according to Subber, he left. What happened next was captured on video obtained by the Inquirer. Three prisoners attacked Subber, one stabbing him repeatedly with a homemade knife, others punching and stomping him. After he got away, they had time to conceal the evidence, mopping up the trail of blood. This is a direct quote. I'm praying the whole time. God, please let me get through this, Subber said. He grew lightheaded as he hit the emergency buzzer in his cell over and over. Alone in his cell, Subber popped his dislocated shoulder back into place and used, please hear this, used T-shirts as bandages, he said. It took 5 T-shirts and about an hour and a half before help finally arrived. Share with me your thoughts about this, Chris. You've been at the forefront in your social justice fight for humane treatment for those who are incarcerated and as they transition back into, you know, back into society. Share with me your thoughts on just the headlines and a brief summary of what was just read.
Well, you know, this sort of process of looking at Philadelphia prison system, or Philadelphia Department of Prisons as it's called now, has been going on now for, I don't know, probably back to March of 2020 when, or March of 2021 when the young man, and I'm not remembering his name, had been released, you know, right, and was murdered on the grounds while waiting for his family to come and pick him up. And, you know, and there's still a lot of investigation with that because they're not sure why there wasn't a staff member in the, you know, in the, on the gate that night there, mm-hmm. you know, there's lots of how, why was the gate open so that they could, you know, could run back up on the grounds. You know, there's lots of unanswered questions with that, but the Inquirer then started really investigating. And so they've written probably 16, 17 different articles, maybe more. Those are the ones that I know about, on the conditions that have been deteriorating, since the pandemic.
Right.
You know, and they're, so, you know, since then there have been several lawsuits filed.
Mm-hmm.
There was two correctional officers arrested. You know, one was arrested for fraud. There was another two arrested for basically running a fight club in the prison. You know, because basically the tension in the prison is from spending literally years, some of them, particularly CFCF, because CFCF usually that's where most of the residents there are. Most of the guys that are there for very serious charges, they're waiting trial and very serious charges, or they've been found guilty and they're waiting to go upstate. So, the, you know, and it's also the biggest, the largest prison, And so you've had this sort of conditions where these guys have been locked down now 23 hours a day for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and anybody knows who can tell you that solitary conditions affect the mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, the UN Commission on Human Rights said that anything over 15 days of solitary confinement is torture.
Right.
You know, and it's not just the lockdowns. It's also, you know, they have not had the structure in place. They haven't had the staff in place to make sure that these guys are getting showers like they're supposed to, that they're getting even meals like they're supposed to,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they're getting their mail, that they're getting, you know, their medication if they're on that, that they're getting medical treatment, you know, all of this. So you just got these people in cages for days and days and days on end, you know, and with no relief, and wondering why there isn't, I actually wonder why there's not more violence,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you've basically mentally tortured people for 2 years. You know, and so, you know, and folks are already coming from trauma and already coming from, you know, community violence and already, and so we're just putting this in there, you know, and this has been something that basically the city has been trying to ignore, explain away, you know, nobody seems to want to take any accountability. Nobody seems to know who is accountable. You know, I know the mayor said that, that Commissioner Carney is doing a great job in spite of the pandemic, but 29 people have died. You know, and that is more that, and kind of put that into you know, into context. There are approximately about a little more than 4,000 people on State Road right now.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have 29 deaths in 2015 when the population was more than double that.
Wow.
You know, even going back a few years before that, when at one point the prison population on State Road was more than 10,000,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't have 29 deaths a year.
Right. Right.
You know, so this is, you know, this is kind of ridiculous that half that population and we've had this many deaths. You know, we have situations where, you know, staff isn't showing up to work. For instance, New Year's Eve was reported in one of the lawsuits that ACLU and the Pennsylvania Institutional Law Project and Abolitionist Law Center filed,
mm-hmm.
was alleged in the suit that, you know, on New Year's Eve, there were 124 corrections officers scheduled to work. So these aren't empty positions.
Right.
124 corrections officers scheduled to work on New Year's Eve, and only 10 showed up.
That's wow. Wow.
And when you consider the population, I think CF, you know, at that time was like 1,800,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you got 10 COs showed up to work to monitor, you know, hundreds of people. And you're wondering why things, you know, why people aren't getting fed, why people aren't getting showers, why people aren't getting medication, why, you know, and, you know, this is just the ongoing thing, and nobody seems to be paying attention to it. But basically, we're just, you know, it's more like a third world country prison up there where you're just throwing a bunch of people in cages and letting them have at it, you know. And if they get fed, they get fed. If they don't, they don't. If they get, you know, and we keep being told by the city this is not happening. But we've got person after person who's been released describing these, you know, these conditions, and everybody ain't all lying. You know, now you've had the Pennsylvania Prison Society, which has, you know, statutory obligation to go in and monitor these prisons and report and let the legislature and the city councils know what's going on, have a response. And they produced two reports basically saying everything that I've just said in those reports, and have had PDP, say, you know, the Philadelphia Department of Prisons and the city saying, oh, they're just exploiting this for political gain.
Yep.
They're not serious. They're, you know, I mean, when they went in and said that the locks on the cells didn't work and the emergency buzzers didn't work and the, you know, and this, that wasn't, they don't have skin in the game to lie is what I'm kind of, you know, I mean, Philadelphia Prison Society has a long reputation of good work,
mm-hmm.
a long reputation of being, you know, an honest player in all of this, you know, and you know, wouldn't stake its reputation on a false report, you know? So, this is a real problem, you know, but I mean, what's been happening for the last, you know, for the last couple of years is there's been very little oversight. You know, we found out, one of the interesting things we found out was that, city council really doesn't have oversight of the prison system, except for the county prison system. It's the only department they really don't have oversight of, except budgetary. They deal with the budget, but they don't have a lot of oversight. They get to pretty much operate almost independently. Even the mayor doesn't have full authority over the prison system, you know, so except hiring and firing, you know, the political appointees that work there. But they basically, you know, nobody has any oversight. They and then they got rid of the old trustee board and now have this prison advisory commission that literally has no power. We've had sources inside the board tell us they don't even get to speak at meetings.
Wow.
You know, they just come in, they get, you know, the commissioner gets up there and talks for a half an hour and then they send them home. They don't even get to speak, ask questions. They have no real authority. They don't have any access to any information other than what the commissioner tells them. So they're not an independent, they're no longer an independent commission like they were when it was the, you know, the prison trustee board. You know, so this is, it's really bad right now. And it doesn't seem like anybody wants to listen or care. And I also am concerned because as much publicity has been around these issues, the public isn't saying much either.
So, Chris, you know? Hold that thought. We're going to go to a 30-second station break or conversation unplug, and we're going to come back. And when we come back, we're going to discuss why oversight is needed. Let's take a 30-second station break. You're listening to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB with Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers, brought to you by Lancaster Bible College, Capital Seminary, and Graduate School. LBC Philadelphia location has programs for busy working adults in accounting, business, Bible, communication, ministry, community transformation, and social engagement, human services, criminal justice, healthcare management, and more. Connect with LBC and Capital Seminary today by visiting lbc.edu/philly or call 215-280-6339. You're back on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM on just in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection with my guest, Pastor Reverend Dr. Chris Jimenez. Chris talked about oversight, etc., and I wanted to segue into this next 15 minutes after the break, why oversight is needed. There's a lot of information, Pastor Jimenez, you just said, and I want to reinforce what you just said with the Philadelphia Inquirer and then tied into some documents that you sent me. This one, two reports from the Pennsylvania Prison Society. This one I'm going to coincide with or juxtapose from the Philadelphia Inquirer, the report that you gave me for July 13th, 2021. When we talked about the Philadelphia Inquirer's article about, let me get his name right quick. I got the last name, Mark Subher. All right. Mark Subher described months of lockdown, leaving his cell an hour or two a day, not even at all on many weekends. In his precious minutes of movement, he said he had to choose, call home, call to his lawyer, or a shower, just to feel normal. He pleaded for toilet paper, sometimes using a sock or t-shirt instead. He watched his eyes stinging and watering as a man was pepper sprayed just for breakdancing. He heard how other prisoners could jam their cell locks with plastic bags so they could jump out and fight. Like many others, he went hungry a few times a week. Staff simply didn't deliver meals. In the Pennsylvania Prison Society report that they sent to the commissioner, it says the following: limited access to toilet paper, cleaning supplies, and showers. Unprompted, men in B1 and C1 both spoke about lack of toilet paper. In B1, a man reported having to tear up pieces of his sheets to use as toilet paper. In C1, two men explained that each pair of cellmates is issued one roll per week. They stated that the roll typically runs out by the end of the week, and as a result, a black market has developed with incarceration people buying toilet paper from one another. Talk to me, Pastor Chris.
And, you know, and we wonder why we talk about needing oversight. You know, I don't think anybody, you know, we just had the same issue with the police department and the appointment of the citizens, you know, police oversight commission.
Right.
You know, that's taken forever. I mean, it was voted on in November of 2020, you know, November 2020 on that ballot. And here it is, we're in 2022 and they're just now getting around to appointing people. But that's neither here nor there, you know, but that there's a need, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's been proven in all of these cases that these organizations can't police themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, that there needs to be some kind of outside, civilian oversight that is going to say what is acceptable and what's not acceptable,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it needs to have adequate authority. It needs to have subpoena power. It needs to have, you know, the ability to provide direction. It needs the ability to call witnesses. It needs the ability to demand, you know, accurate reports and information,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's nothing like that right now. And so, you know, it's run, the place is running pretty much rampant. I mean, people are dying, you know, and know that the majority of these folks have not been convicted of a crime.
Exactly. That's what the article says. Yes.
That are on state road, that are, you know, that are in the Philadelphia prison, like any other county jail. These are folks usually awaiting trial,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, unfortunately with the pandemic backing up the courts and, you know, and all kinds of stuff, a lot of them have been in there far longer than they're supposed to be. Some of them have been in there longer than their crime actually calls for under sentencing guidelines.
Right.
So even if they're convicted, they've served more time than they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is just getting to the point where it's getting ridiculous, and there seems to be no movement. You know, what was sad was that at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, there was a lot of agreed upon oversight that was going to actually decarcerate a lot of the prison and bring the population down significantly lower.
Mm-hmm.
It was also agreements between the police department, the DA's office, the defender's office, the PDP and probation and parole to sort of, okay, we're only going to incarcerate pretrial if we have to.
Right.
You know, we're going to try and make deals so that we can get people out of there so that they're not in there because of COVID and because of the understaffing problems and all this. And then what happened was First Judicial District, you know, judges started ramping up bail, making it harder for people to get out. Oh, you want these people on the street? We're going to do exactly the opposite. So, you know, First Judicial District kind of refused to play ball.
Right.
And the next thing we know, you know, it's even harder for people to get out, you know? And so it's, you know, they've contributed to this continued backlog, this, you know, we don't know what's happened. I've heard there's as many, I think they reported as many as 600 positions open among corrections officers.
Mm-hmm.
600? You know, that's, you know, I mean, that's a little ridiculous, you know, that they need. And I understand that that's, you know, pandemic, that's, you know, there's lots of different reasons for it. But really, you know, this is not serving. If you can't meet the needs of the people in prison, then we need to be letting them go.
Mm-hmm.
We need to, you know, if you can't meet the needs of 4,000 people, then we need to reduce the population so that folks can get out and, you know, and one, better advocate for their own cases anyway, because it's much harder to advocate positively for yourself while you're incarcerated than while you're on the street. And the most of the folks that are there are only there because they're too poor to pay bail. You know, so, or they're on a detainer from from probation and parole, you know, so, you know, when you've got most of the people there that are just too poor to pay bail, this is a real issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, you know, I don't think most of the people that have died, interestingly enough, are not there for a crime that includes capital punishment. So, you know, you don't deserve to die in a county jail because you couldn't pay your parking tickets.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, we really need to really address a lot of that stuff. And it's just not being addressed.
So, Pastor Chris, city leaders, including, this is a direct quote from the Philadelphia Inquirer, city leaders, include Mayor James Kenney, either declined interview requests or defended the conditions at the complex, casting staff complaints in particular as a negotiating tactic during ongoing contract talks. Commissioner Blanche Carney also declined an interview. Her office provided written responses to questions acknowledging that conditions are challenging, but attributed that to outside forces. The COVID-19 pandemic has created challenges in corrections nationwide. The statement said aggressive hiring, the decline of COVID infections, and resumption of court cases would resolve those challenges. Share with me your thoughts before we got 4 minutes before we go to a station. Share with me your thoughts.
You know, I kind of find the statement a little laughable, to tell you the truth.
Right.
You know, one, it's passing the buck. You're the commissioner. You're responsible. You know, you're responsible for the safety of those citizens who are incarcerated under your care. You've been given responsibility for them. So you should answer for 29 deaths. You know, you should answer for the number of assaults going up. You should answer for the number of, you know, staff assaults going up. You should answer for the number of excessive force complaints that have happened. You should be answering the fact that you have a legal obligation to provide 3 meals a day, to provide basics like toilet paper,
right?
Because it's to provide cleaning supplies so that the place can be, you know, not rapidly spreading COVID and every other illness, because, you know, you've got people living in filth. You know, this is not a third world country.
No, no.
Philadelphia is not a third world city. You know, we should, I think we can make sure that people get provided meals and showers and mail. And, you know, I thought interfering with the mail was a federal offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but they should be able to talk to their lawyers, you know, been able to, you didn't want to have in-person visits in, you should have put the structure in place and the, you know, infrastructure in place so that you could do video visits for family. You know, I mean, you just can't cut people off from everything for years and think that's okay, that's not going to, I mean, when we think about how much we're traumatizing these folks, how much we're, and then we're, you know, and 95% of people who are incarcerated are going back to society at some point.
Right.
Do we want to, I mean, is it fair that we've actively participated in traumatizing 4,000 people, and then we're just going to release them back to society with no services,
right?
No, you know, I mean, no. For the gentleman like the one in the article, you know, he's released with no services, no care. Why? Because as it says, he beat his case.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he's been incarcerated for all of this time, for months and months and months.
About 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, 2 to 3 years, was found not guilty, you know, and so he's just kicked, at least if you're convicted, you have some services, reentry services available to you, but you have none if you're in car. So we've taken 2 to 3 years of your life on, you know, a case we couldn't prove.
Right.
And now we're getting ready to, you know, where, you know, now we just kick you back to the streets and, you know, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder folks are filing lawsuits. I would be too.
Yeah. Chris, before we go on a station break, I'm going to probably have to come up with that information after the station. Nope, got it right here before we go on a station break. You talked about lawsuits, and my wife chimes in on Facebook Live and says, COVID has nothing to do with treating people inhumanely, and I agree with that more than 100%.
Absolutely. 100%.
You said something about lawsuits. This is very interesting here. The Philadelphia Inquirer quote, there's a quote that states the following. The city has paid out $835,000 since January 2021 for lawsuits alleging staff assaults, wrongful deaths, and medical negligence. The largest settlement, $310,000, went to an epileptic man who in 2019 was placed in a top bunk, had a seizure, and then fell, fracturing his neck. Let's resonate on that, and let's go to a station break on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM, 30-second station break. You're listening to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB with Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers, brought to you by Lancaster Bible College, Capital Seminary, and Graduate School. LBC Philadelphia location has programs for busy working adults in accounting, business, Bible, communication, ministry, community transformation, and social engagement, human services, criminal justice, healthcare management, and more. Connect with LBC and Capital Seminary today by visiting lbc.edu/philly or call 215-280-6339. We're back on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM with my guest, Pastor Chris Jimenez. Our subject is entitled Human Rights Crisis in the Philadelphia Correctional Facilities. You know, lately interviews I've been doing has been very hard, not hard because of the station, but because of the subject matter and you wrestling with your own, how can you say, your own emotions at this point, mm-hmm. and reading the Philadelphia Inquirer and then coming across the reports that you sent me from the Pennsylvania Prison Society just enrages me even more. Disclaimer, and I want to go real deep and get even more serious than we did in the first 30 minutes. We're made in the image of God. You got it. We're made in the image of God. And if someone has alleged to commit a crime or has committed a crime, yes, I do believe you to the extent you hold them accountable. I don't believe that you over-aggressively single people out because of the color of their skin and their economic status, that you choose to, you know, use a judicial system, you know, based on skin color and economic situations. But even in the event for those who are incarcerated, they still have to be treated in a humane manner because they're human, period. And, you know, this is... If we can advocate for other injustices that's taking place, there's this mindset that those who are incarcerated are less than human, so we're going to treat them less than what God made them to be, and that's what angered me. This segues into this Philadelphia Inquirer article. Trent Mason was supposed to come home. He was supposed to come home. 38-year-old father and cook at a popular Center City Pub was locked up in January, charged in a domestic incident with assault. But on February 4th, his bail changed to unsecured. It meant Mason could be released. He just had to wait for a sheriff's officer to transport him to traffic court under city policy. Anyone with $5,000 in traffic court debt must be taken to traffic court to set up a payment plan before release. But Mason never made it to traffic court. Instead, on February the 8th, he died in his cell. Representatives of the prisons and medical examiners said the cause remains under investigation. Mason's family is losing patience. I want answers, his sister Sharika Magnum stated. They're not giving them to me. It's very overwhelming and stressful because I can't get no closure. So far, every new fact she learned about his death has further alarmed her. It occurred 4 days after, he could have gone home on a cell block where no officer was present without an identifying rest band on.
Yeah, in fact, the story goes on to say that they actually misidentified him to begin with.
Wow. No,
that they misidentified him to begin with because he wasn't wearing his band. And you know, they couldn't find any band, which is something that's supposed to, that every person who's a resident of PDP is supposed to have a band on. But it's, you know, this is the really ridiculous stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, and can't get any answers of why or how somebody, you know, passed away. That, like you said, these, you know, and I'm the same way. Even as a formerly incarcerated person, I believe in accountability. I don't have an issue with accountability. I'm an abolitionist in the sense that the way we're doing it now, like this, you know, isn't working, and we mm-hmm. need to figure out another way to hold people accountable, because this is just not working, you know. And then understanding that, you know, the vast majority of people, particularly in county prisons, we're talking about people that are there, you know. Yes, you have people who have, you know, attempted or committed violent crimes. I'm not saying that, but majority of the folks that are there for misdemeanors. They're right. there for misdemeanors because they can't pay bail. They're there for, you know, drug possession, or they're there because they, you know, because we don't have adequate mental health facilities. And so we end up incarcerating people who are mentally ill.
Right.
We have homeless people that end up in these situations, not because they've really done anything to anyone, but it's not hard to find yourself incarcerated for something relatively small. And that's the vast majority of who makes up county prisons.
Right.
We have a real issue with the fact that these folks are in there. Like I said, he was there because he was there for 4 extra days. Imagine being incarcerated for 4 extra days because of traffic court.
That's right. It doesn't make any sense.
You know, because of traffic court. You know, this isn't easy of getting someone out, you know. And we're just not doing it. It's almost like we can't be bothered.
Mm-hmm.
We can't be bothered. You know, so this is and we blame it on staffing, and we blame it on, you know, one of the reports also said that alleged that the sheriff's department wasn't transporting people based on how recently they'd been tested for COVID or whether or not they were vaccinated, or, you know, you were concerned about that. You could have done a video visit with traffic court. You know, why aren't we doing that? Why wasn't there a video hearing so that he could be released? If you didn't have anybody to transport him, why aren't we handling this, you know, by Zoom? If you and I can do this radio show by Zoom, how come, you know, we can't do a traffic court visit by Zoom? You know, so this is, I mean, and they're doing in other jurisdictions, you know, where everything's by Zoom just about, you know. So this is, I mean, again, this is a real issue that we cannot seem to get. And this again goes back to oversight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like, you know, there is no executive oversight of these agencies that are playing with people's lives, and, you know, and just seem to have a very callous attitude towards the actual humanity of folks.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it really bothers me. Our societies are judged based on how they treat their most vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and by the time they get into prison, you know, it's kind of not much more of a vulnerable state than what we're doing. And it just isn't, I don't see how it's working. I don't see it how, one, it serves victims.
Right.
No, people who've been victims are not being served by the system like it is right now. And we're definitely not, you know, if we're not treating people like human beings, if we have to sacrifice our humanity,
mm-hmm.
you know, to interact with incarcerated people, we've got a real problem.
Hey.
You know, and that's exactly what seems to be happening.
Hey, Chris, my wife chimes in on Facebook Live and states, unfortunately, many do not get involved in the fight for rights for incarcerated people because, one, they are believed to be guilty even if not yet tried, and, two, people believe that guilty people deserve what they get, and, three, out of sight, out of mind, we must change the public mindset about people who are incarcerated. Going back to Trent Mason's tragic situation. DeMarcus Tucker was incarcerated on the same cell block, described hearing Mason banging and shouting for hours before suddenly going quiet. According to Tucker, the sprinklers in Mason's cell had gone off, flooding it with cold, filthy water. He said the entire cell block started shouting and banging, but correctional officers didn't arrive for 2 hours. It then took hours for staff to correctly identify Mason, Tucker and others said. That timing aligns with the internal logs obtained by the Inquirer that show no entries after an OK tour at 6:14 p.m. until medical staff were called at 8:50 p.m. Mason is misidentified in the log. Tucker said, there are times we're in a cell and no COs are on the block for hours. You can be in a cell with someone who was homicidal, suicidal, and no one is coming.
And so the question is, I mean, you know, that tells, sounds to me like the man drowned in his cell.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, literally nobody, there's no indicator, you know, CFCF is not a, is not an old facility. It's one of the newer ones.
Right.
Which means that somebody somewhere should know there's a sprinkler going off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're not talking about House of Corrections, which the reason they closed it, because it was over 100 years old and they were actually worried that if they ever had a fire in House of, that folks in their cells would die, because the cells were of the type that you had to open each one with a key.
Right, right.
And the, you know, CFCF's not supposed to be like that. This is supposed to be an automatic. So in other words, somebody in some control center should know that there's a sprinkler going off, that mm-hmm. there's emergency buzzers being hit, that there's, that the lock isn't functioning properly, that it's been jammed, or it's, you know, this stuff's supposed to be what this facility was, you know, supposed to be a high-tech facility when it was built,
right?
You know, and here we are, you know, God, a guy, it honestly sounds like he drowned in his cell or died of exposure from cold water, you know. Either way, you know, something's not right. And you know, and we'd rather sweep it under the rug than actually bring light to it, actually talk about it. And that's the thing that has us concerned. It's, you know, my question now to the mayor and to the, you know, is how many more people have to die before we take this seriously?
Wow. Hey, to the producers, I had someone said they were trying to call in, said the lines was busy. So I don't know, yeah, if something's going on. Okay. So, Reverend Shaw, I know you tried to call in. They're going to check the lines, and I'll let you know in a few seconds. Before we go to a station break, I want to segue into another fatal story. I just had a lot. I remember when you know more about this with your social justice work. I remember when this hit the news. I remember talking to colleagues in ministry about this. Armani Faison had a horrible death in the prison system of Philadelphia. Gene said he was tortured by an inmate. No one was there to protect him or help him from the inmate, reported in the Inquirer. Basically, what happened to Armani, I don't want to happen to another person or any other family. This is Gene 63, his father, Gene Faison, his father is a retired New York State prison guard, said no one from the city prisons has contacted his family to explain what happened or to offer condolences. Faison's family attorney, John Kyle, said that in addition to suing the city for $20 million, he's calling for Mayor Kenney to replace Carney. This is what happened before we go to the station break, and we'll come back and talk about it. Faison, get the name right again, Armani Faison was arrested for shoplifting, simple assault, tussling with store personnel, and arson. The latter because he had mental health issues. Let me say that again. He had mental health issues. He set his pants on fire while in police custody. He was not immediately released to await trial because of the shoplifting arrest meant he had violated his probation for a previous conviction on a theft charge in Delaware County. He was taken to Curran from Hull Correctional Facility in Northeast Philadelphia in March of last year. 3 days later, he was put into a cell with Kevin Macy. The cell had room because a previous inmate had moved after Macy attempted to rape him there, Kyle said. Shortly after Faison was put into the cell, the suit said Macy attacked him for hours as Faison cried for help. And those inmates housed nearby, it went unanswered. He was raped and killed. Yes, sir. Yeah, he was raped and killed. Let's go on a station break right now, and then let's come back and talk about that on WWDB 860 AM on Conversation Unplugged. All right, listening to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB with Reverend Dr. Wayne and Weathers, brought to you by Lancaster Bible College, Capital Seminary, and Graduate School. LBC Philadelphia location has programs for busy working adults in accounting, business, Bible, communication, ministry, community transformation, and social engagement, human services, criminal justice, healthcare management, and more. Connect with LBC and Capital Seminary today by visiting lbc.edu/philly or call 215-280-6339. We're back on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM. We're going to take a pause right now. Reverend Pam Shaw. Hey, Reverend Shaw, how you doing?
Hi, how are you? Doing. Pastor Weathers and Pastor Chris, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, Pam? I haven't heard from you in a long time.
I know that's right. Well, I just wanted to make a couple of points. Number one, you know, these stories are just hard to hear, even emotionally. They are horrible. And to think that this is going on right around us. And yeah. I guess, Pastor Chris, when you said something that really touched me was how these movements for social justice at one time were indeed led by the church. And I think that's because the church is really the only hope in all of this. Even when we've tried before with some of these commissions, part of the problem was that it became so political that the people who ended up on them could not really speak for the welfare of those who were incarcerated. And the other thing that I want to point out, too, is that some of this has had to do with mismanagement of money. That there has not necessarily been, not in every case, but a shortage of funds to address these issues, but they never seem to get there. And I just really appreciate both of you today talking about this out loud, because this is going to have to be one of those, you know, silent no more movements where we really continue to work on this, talk about this, and hold those people who we have voted for, who are in office, and insist on a high level of accountability. But I do think this is just horrible, and at the highest level, it's not acceptable at all. So thank you so much for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Reverend Shaw. Thank you for calling, and thank you for being a faithful listener as well. And thank you. There's another call. Wow, got some calls coming in. Shantae Bryant, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Okay. Hey, talk to us. You're here on Conversation Unplugged. Thank you for calling in.
So I'm calling in about the Raleigh Smart that we have in at Love Park. The DHS Stop the Family Separation Raleigh. We're going to be represented by Councilman David O. Cindy Bash going to be there. It's more about DHS and families being separated. I'm a grandmother from Faith Advocacy Movement that also went through having, you know, my family separated. My grandchildren, a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old was in 2018 was raped by their mother boyfriend. And the workers at DHS, workers was actually family members. So it was an aunt. Who was the supervisor, and the sister that was a supervisor that worked closely with the commissioner. And everything, you know, the case was covered up, no nothing. I never got in. They put sheriffs in front of the door. So I know firsthand about this, and I also was retaliated on, told if I kept speaking out about the situation that my other grandchildren, all in my family, you know, all the children in my family would be removed. Well, sure enough, this supervisor, which is a, her name is Stacy Moultrie, came.
Somehow there's a disconnect, but yeah, thank you for calling in. We'll look into that, you know, per se. Mm-hmm. Concerned about, as a disclaimer, that was a call in. Those views did not reflect Conversation Unplugged at WWDB. So we would need to investigate, you know, what was said. But the show that we were focusing on today deals with, you know, human rights conditions in the Philadelphia prison systems. You got me? Yeah. So, Chris, I know we have a few more minutes, maybe about 3 or 4 more minutes. Where do we go from here? You know, what can we do to address these particular situations? My spirit is vexed right now.
I think it starts with, you know, it starts with us as a community standing up and saying we're not living with this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're it means, and if that means that, you know, the faith community steps up and takes a role and says, you know, because we have a faith community, let's be real, we vote more than any other subpopulation. People attached to a faith community vote in larger percentages. It, you know, we're the ones that show up for the election for dog catcher. Mm-hmm. You know, we vote in every election. We, you know, we're constantly approached by those in power for, you know, for opportunities to use our pulpits as, you know, our platforms for town halls and all that. No, it's time that we use some of that untapped political power and say, you know, hey, we're not standing for this. This is morally wrong.
Hey, Chris,
and we have an obligation to do that.
We have, okay, the call's gone. We have some, okay, got it. I'm sorry. We had some calls we thought was for the show. Yeah, it's something Reverend Shaw said and something you said, and this is something I may segue into at 5 o'clock. I have a 5 o'clock show on www.spiritualconnectradio.com. We talked about how the church was at the forefront of the social justice movement, especially Black church, and somehow along the line, we're not at the forefront as we once were, community organizing, et cetera. And the reason for that is because we've replaced our liberation theology with an individualistic salvation theology that we inherited from evangelicals. You got me? That the whole focus should be on saving souls and saving souls alone. And that's not the work of Jesus. Jesus was in the community, liberating, you know, and that's not a liberal word, liberating. If you check out all four gospels, liberating. And what I'm witnessing in these articles and what you provided for me from the Pennsylvania Prison Society is that, you know, there's an inhumane treatment, you know, that's taking place, you know, inhumane treatment against correctional officers, inhumane treatment that correctional officers are invoking on those that don't have power. It doesn't make any sense for an individual to not get any toilet paper and have to use either sheets or t-shirts. It's unfathomable. You know what I mean? It's sad. You know, we call this our country, the world of the free and a home of the braves. And yet if you're incarcerated, then you're treated like you're worse than less than, you know, people are in their cells, you know, undermanned by correctional officers. It's getting raped and abused and things like that. And what do? We say nothing. We say nothing. And I thank God you're at the forefront. You know, you've been blowing the trumpet, the horn, the tuba, the piccolo. You've been crashing cymbals, crashing the triangle, you know, blowing amplifiers. You've been at the forefront of this. And I commend you and others as well who've been at the forefront of this social justice initiative. Can you provide us with some closing words in the next minute, Chris?
Well, so, you know, we're just, I don't know. I'm like you. I'm tired. You know. Mm-hmm. I'm angry. I'm hurt. You know, based on for the you know, for the individuals, for the families, for the even for the victims who are being so poorly served by all of this system. And it's time for us to stand up and do something about it. And
right.
And as people of faith, there's an option. You know, healing communities. You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/healingcommunitiesPA. You know, I'm Healing Communities PA. You can connect with us, and we'll come. And if you don't, you're not sure how to get involved with this, we will help you. We train, we do trainings, we do, you know, we do workshops. We want to see people of faith step up, mm-hmm. and, you know, and organize around this. So we're doing that work, because we are going to hold folks accountable. You know, it's the bottom. If we have to make it an election issue, if we have to make it a, you know, if we have to do this in court, you know, because it's a multi-pronged strategy. You have organizations that are suing PDP. You have people that are pressuring the council. You have people pressuring the mayor to fire Commissioner Carney. You know, all of the just to be basically accountable. You know, so this work is going to continue. We're going to continue in the fight, but you know, it's like I said. You know, the harvest is plenty, but the laborers are few.
Right.
And we need folk to step up. And if you're not sure how, if you don't think you have the skills, we have trainings to provide you the skills. So don't think that just not knowing how to organize should be a barrier to you getting involved. So you can reach out to us again at Healing Communities. You can reach out to me. My number is 267-582-5013. That's you can reach out to me an email at cmkimmenez@yahoo.com, and we will definitely help you, you know, get involved.
So, Chris, we got to go. There's another show coming on at 2:00 live here, Conversation Unplugged. So we're going to unplug so that we can plug back in next week. Thank you, Chris, for coming in, educating, informing, inspire, challenging, and charging us as we continue to fight for just human rights conditions at the Philadelphia Correctional Facilities. It's inhumane for people to have to use T-shirts and socks just to wipe themselves. It's inhumane for the violence that's taking place. So let's continue this fight. Let's unplug and talk about this again. Take care and God bless.
God bless.
We need resolution. We have the power. We need restitution. First, we need to talk about